Last week I talked about the weeds of the world. Again, I'm not talking about that weed. I'm talking about weeds, that which is useless, noxious, unwanted, those plants that nobody wants. And we also talked about weeds, how they serve as a metaphor for those corruptive people and sinful behaviors that infiltrate the world and sometimes infiltrate our lives, that choke the life out of us. Remember the parable of the sower we cited there? There was weeds that would choke the life out of people. Last week, we obviously were pretty negative toward weeds, and rightly so, especially when we're dealing with linking weeds to sin and rebellion. That makes sense. But now I want to consider the plants themselves. And even though they are unwanted plants, it doesn't mean that they have nothing to offer us in way of a lesson. So we're going to actually look at positive lessons that we can derive of all things from weeds. And this is not an unusual thing to do. Consider viruses, for example. I know we have gone through the whole gamut with the coronavirus and other viruses. You may not like viruses. I certainly don't like viruses, but I'm pretty fascinated by what they are. They're basically unwanted, specialized protein robots. That's what they are. And they know how to get into the body, and they know how to replicate things to their liking, to their blueprints, if you will. They are fascinating in what they do. They're fascinating in how they manage to survive and adapt. They're fascinating in how they get into your body in the first place. I mean, again, say what you will about viruses. They don't have to be your friend, but there's something to learn from those things. And I believe that we can draw upon nature, the natural world, the physical world that we live in to understand spiritual values and spiritual truths, either negatively or positively. Weeds are like that. You may not like weeds growing in your yard or your garden beds. I certainly don't. But give credit where credit is due. Again, we're not crediting what weeds may represent as sin, but we do want to recognize them as the plant, the lowlier of God's creation, the humble weed. The first thing that impresses me, for what it's worth, since I wrote the lesson, you're going to get my take on what impresses me up front, right? And that is that weeds are tenacious and persistent. Just because you weed once doesn't mean you're done weeding, right? So you can weed all you want, get your yard free of weeds, get your garden beds free of weeds, and you'll have to be doing that again here probably in a couple weeks. They reproduce quickly. They do not give up easily. They do not surrender at the first sign of assault against them. Think about that. Just because you pull the tops off of weeds or mow over the stalk of a weed doesn't mean it just lays over and dies and goes, well, you know, I gave it my best. They struggle to survive. In fact, everything about weeds, if you think about it, is all about a struggle for survival. And that provides a great lesson for endurance for Christians. We should take a cue from weeds on this point alone. How often do we see Christians unable to weather the smallest opposition or succumbing to the most obvious temptation? Or surrendering their commitment to the congregation or even to Christ himself just because someone said something to them or something happened to them, things did not go their way, they got their feelings hurt, they heard a lesson that they didn't like, right? This has happened. We've seen this. Just thin-skinned, fragile people that it just takes the smallest amount of provocation and they just fall to pieces and disappear. If weeds did this, they would be extinct. They would have been extinct a long time ago. Their tenacity and their struggle to endure lends to their great success for what they are. And I'd like to read from Hebrews chapter, I'm not going to read the entire passage here, but Hebrews 10 verse 35 and 36 in particular, and see what the writer says here. He's talking about those who are thinking about recanting their faith in Jesus and returning to the law of Moses. That's his audience, the Christians, Jewish Christians. And he says here in verse 35, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, confidence in Christ, that is, which has a great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. Well, that's something that we need to have. We need to have confidence. We need to have endurance. In fact, he doesn't sit there and try to, you know, go there, poor thing, I'm just so sorry, things have not gone well for you, so much so that you're thinking of abandoning ship here. He says, you have need of endurance. That's what you need right now. In other words, you need to think more like a weed, if I could say it that way. Weeds are very tenacious plants here. They put up a fight. They're not going to just fall over and die. They're not going to face extinction. And that's what you and I need to have, is we need to have that same sort of confidence and therefore that same sort of endurance and tenacity. We can't just fall to pieces or fade into the background or give up altogether anytime we're faced with a critique or someone's opposition or adversity or setbacks, real or imagined, because sometimes they're not even real setbacks, we just think that they are. So say what you want against weeds. In many cases, ounce for ounce, so to speak, they are stronger, braver, more tenacious, more resilient than many churchgoers. There's a lesson to learn from them. Related to that topic here, weeds are not afraid of and do not care what the world thinks of them. We all have probably a general consensus here that nobody wants weeds. Weeds don't care what we think. They don't care about our consensus. They are not proud. They do not seek their own glory. They do not require the approval of men or society or even the rest of the plant kingdom. I'm sure the rest of the plants hate weeds too, because they take away what is theirs, right? And they interfere with their growth and sometimes strangle them out. Weeds are just doing their very best to thrive and survive. And for that reason, they don't refuse to grow just because people oppose them or speak ill of them or do everything in their power to eradicate them. They still strive to grow. Weeds know that they cannot compete with the glory of those other showy floral plants, right? Like roses and orchids and tulips and whatever else. I'm very limited in my flower knowledge, okay? I'm not a flower person. But neither do they care or worry about that competition. They know that they never win the favor of most of the human population, but then again, that's not their objective. That's not what they're here for. There's some great lessons you can see already for Christians in those statements that I just made. We would do well to have the same attitude and the same perspective that we see in weeds in this case. So often Christians are more concerned with what friends think about them, or family members think about them, or co-workers think about them, versus the God who is saving them. Many are too sensitive or too timid because they're seeking the wrong approval. They're trying to be friends with everyone. They want everyone to like them. They want to be, you know, everyone's favorite person, and so on. The fact is, it's just not going to happen. Not if you're a Christian. You will be friends to some. You'll be some people's mentors and perhaps even their heroes. But to other people, you will be despised and hated, and people will have contempt for you. If you were a weed, you wouldn't care about any of that. Romans chapter 8 and verse 31 through 34, Paul has something to say about this idea of where our confidence again should be placed. Romans 8, starting verse 31, what shall we say to these things? If God is for us, who is against us? He who did not spare his own son, but delivered him over for us all, how will he not also with him freely give us all things? Who will bring a charge against God's elect? God is the one who justifies. Who is the one who condemns? Christ Jesus is he who died, yes, rather, who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who intercedes for us. Think about what Paul is saying here. He's not saying, since God is for us, nobody's going to be against us, because that's just not true. Actually, the opposite is true. If God is for you and you are for God, most of the world's going to hate you. And he goes on to say here, well, who's the one that's justifying you? Well, if it's God, then that's all you need. If God justifies you, it really doesn't matter who else does or doesn't justify you. And what about the person condemning you? I mean, consider the source. If they're condemning you because you're a Christian and faithful to God, well, then that's their problem. And that really is their problem. Don't let it become your problem. Since God is for us, it doesn't matter who disagrees with us, who even hates us. Our concern ought to be for Christ and what he's done for us, not what everyone thinks about that. Not what everyone thinks about your decision to serve the Lord. Let them think what they want. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 13 through 15. Just put the whole thing up here. Peter asks rhetorically, who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? Obviously, there's a lot of people that want to harm you. But that's not his point. His point is, what does it matter? Even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled, but sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. That should be your objective. That should be my objective. Not worrying about what everyone thinks about me because I'm a Christian, or the beliefs that I have as a Christian, or what I do on Sunday morning as a Christian. I really don't care what people think about that. I don't care because that's their problem, not mine. I have a mission as a Christian to uphold what I believe in, and so do you. And that should be most important. This should be our attitude then, not trying to please or cater to everyone's preference or walk on eggshells around everyone who is offended by a gospel that we know has the power to save souls, including and especially our own. That's what should drive us to do these things. We know that we are right if we are walking in the truth and walking according to Christ. We know that we are right. It's the rest of the world that has a problem. Let them have a problem. If you were a weed, you wouldn't care about any of that. Related to that point, weeds do not require optimum conditions before growing as quickly and strongly and profusely as possible. They don't need perfect weather, perfect temperature, perfect soil, even perfect opportunities. They grow anywhere and any way. If you know anything about weeds, if you've ever gone out to pull weeds, you realize this very quickly. They're everywhere. Weeds grow where it is convenient and expected. They also grow where it is inconvenient and unexpected. They do not sit back and wait in the ground until everything is just right for optimum growth. And they do not make excuses for their lack of growth. In fact, they don't hesitate at all. Weeds don't just sit back and second guess everything before making their move to grow. And in that respect, they do not question their master who made them. And they do not say things like, I'm not sure if growing in this patch of dirt is exactly what God wanted for me, so I'm going to wait until I figure it all out. They don't do that. I know I'm being a bit facetious and taking some poetic liberty here with weeds, but the point here is very serious. Okay? And so many Christians would do well to have this same disposition or attitude as weeds have, what we just discussed. Church growth doesn't mean that something happens only when the preacher does his job. Church growth happens when everyone in the congregation is committed to doing their own jobs. And we've talked a lot about being an evangelistic congregation, and that is not incumbent upon any one or handful of people. That is really when the whole congregation is focused on growing and evangelizing. Part of this job that we all have is to put our faith and confidence in the one who causes growth, right? 1 Corinthians 3, 6, we give credit where credit is due. Any growth that we experience here, we give glory to God. He's the one that increases us when we're growing in the right way, that is. We can sow seed in any soil. We should be sowing our seed in any soil. Likewise, as far as individual growth, it's not something that the preacher, or the elders, or the sermons are responsible for. It's what you're responsible for. Whether or not you're growing is your decision, for better or worse. So you can't blame other people. You can't say, well, I'm not growing because the optimum conditions have not appeared yet. You know, the weather's not perfect. The church environment's not perfect. The preacher's not perfect. Good luck with that. You know, the sermons aren't perfect. The song leader, it's, you know, we go down the road of all of our excuses that aren't perfect. And that's why I haven't grown as a Christian. What a lame response, really, to the responsibility that we have given to us by the Lord. And so, often, despite me saying that, you do hear people talking, maybe not in these words, but something to the effect of, I'm not sure if I should talk to fill in the blank because, you know, they're hesitant and fearful and so on. Or the conditions for my growth are not perfect. Maybe next year I'll grow as a Christian. This year, you know, I've got some other things going on. I don't know if I should take time to study the Bible. I'm just so busy right now. I just don't know if I should really be doing that. So what are we doing when we do that? We're making excuses. If you thought like a weed, you wouldn't question your allegiance to the Lord. You would realize that He gave you a mission, and that mission needs to be carried out. And that mission is to serve, is to proclaim the Word in whatever way you're able. It is to study His Word. It is to pray. It is to have fellowship with His people. And you would just do that. Someone says, well, yeah, but what if the conditions aren't perfect? No weed would ever talk like that. Well, what if it's not ideal weather? Well, that's irrelevant to a weed because the weed would say, the master has made me thus and so, and therefore I will comply with his bidding. This is what he wants me to do. And so it must be for us. It is the master's will that we serve, that we proclaim, that we grow. Not ours to sit back and second-guess the master or psychoanalyze everyone, you know, whether we're talking to them or whether they're trying to help us, or to wait for perfect weather, whatever weather we're talking about, or to do nothing until there's optimum conditions. You know, I would have been faithful if the conditions were optimum. And that sounds an awful like, a lot like that scenario in the response from the goats in that great judgment scene in Matthew 25 that we talked about this morning in class. Well, Jesus, if you were here, you know we would have taken care of you. If you had been sick and in prison and needed clothing, you know we would have taken care of you. If the conditions were different, you know we would have responded better. But if we aren't going to respond in the lowlier conditions, we're not going to respond in the greatest of conditions either. Here's another thing to consider about weeds. And by the way, you look at the pictures I've chosen here. I don't know if you can see them as clearly as I meant to have them, but weeds just, they grow anywhere. Everywhere, right? There's a few nasty weeds that keep growing right next to my porch. And it's like, if you're going to grow, then grow somewhere out in the field. You got plenty of acreage out there to grow. But no, right next to my porch, where I have to deal with it all the time. Weeds make excellent use of their resources. Notice you never have to fertilize weeds. You never have to water weeds. Or you don't have to remove their natural enemies. They are self-motivated. They are self-initiating. You can walk on weeds, and they don't care. I have some weeds that grow right between the cul-de-sac and my driveway. There's a little crack there, you know, and the weeds consistently are coming up there, and I drive over them every time I go in my driveway, and they still grow. I'm driving over the top of weeds, and they don't seem to care. That is amazing to me. No one has to plant weeds or cultivate them. They're going to come up on their own, regardless. Weeds use whatever they have to work with, whether it is scarcity or abundance. They do their best to thrive and flourish. They never complain. They never grumble. They would never say things like, I wish I had more sun. You know, or I wish I had more rain. My lawn turns brown every year except for the weeds in it. It's true. It's like that. Well, it's starting to green up now because we've had some rain, but it's been like that through all of August. It's been brown. Except for the weeds. I know where the weeds are. They're the only green thing in my lawn. And it's just amazing to me that they are so, again, persistent and so resilient there that they just don't care about the conditions. You know, Christians would do well to adopt some of these same attitudes and perspective. It's easy for us, I know because I've done it myself, to sit around and commiserate with each other about all the advantages that we don't have, right? While others are more blessed than us, and they're more resourceful, and they've got more money and more opportunity, and they're better speakers, and they know their Bible better, and whatever else we use for our excuses, while overlooking what we have been given instead. Matthew chapter 25 is why I had the that parable of the talents read. Jesus is talking about men who have been given different levels of responsibility. They don't all have the same capability, so he's not going to give them more than they're capable of. But what he does give to them, through the parable I'm speaking here, what he does give to us is commensurate or measurable to what we have as ability. There's a five-talent man, the two-talent man, the one-talent man. Each man had different level of resources to work with, but all were expected to perform and do something to provide a return on the investment proportionate to that which they had been given. He's not going to give five talents to a one-talent man, so to speak, a man who's only capable of one-talent responsibility, and vice versa. If you've been given five talents, so to speak, then use five talents worth of gifts from God. Use them. If you've been given two, then use those two. If you've been given one, don't go bury it, but use it. Use it in some productive way for the master. But do not say, well, the reason why I've not grown in the last 5 years is because the sermons are not inspiring, or the elders haven't encouraged me enough, or the church has not fed me as I think it ought to have done. That is all bogus. Bogus is Latin for baloney. Just so we're clear, just so we all know our Latin basic terminology. Your spiritual responsibility to God is not dependent upon what everyone else should or should not have done for you. Granted, things work easier when they do comply or help and so on. I get that. I understand that. But whatever has been given to you is really your responsibility to use to the master's service. And if those people do help you and the sermons are helpful and so on, then those are consider those additional bonus benefits there. This kind of argument that I'm suggesting here facetiously has no merit. Weeds would never talk like that. So you don't need a perfectly prepared garden bed in order to grow things for the master. I'm talking really about your heart here, okay? I'm talking about your conditions of your circumstances here when I'm talking about this. You don't need your conditions to be tilled and fertilized and had the finest topsoil to grow. You could grow in the crack in the sidewalk or in the side of a road if you wanted to. Weeds do it all the time. Stop holding back on God, if indeed you are. Stop holding back on him just because you didn't get everything you wanted, or you're not as blessed as someone else might have been, as you see it, or, as the next Christian might have been. If you do that sort of thing, if you start reasoning that way, that very negative thinking, that very pessimistic and even self-defeating thinking, you're never going to make it as a weed. And there's a serious point to that, because if you can't do at least what weeds do, how in the world are you going to be a fruit-producing tree for the Lord? How in the world are you going to do that? It all starts somewhere, and it starts with you understanding your role here. Here's another thing to consider. Despite the fact that weeds are unwanted and undesirable and often unattractive, weeds still are very impressive and complex plants. They are still made by God. They use a very sophisticated system of converting sunlight into sugar for fuel, for energy. It's called photosynthesis. They utilize specialized molecules called chlorophyll to absorb sunlight, something that God designed without scientists, without computers, and without evolutionists. Think about that. This is all part of God's plan, God's blueprint. The root, the stems, the leaves, the flowers all utilize the same cellular structure and sugar transport system as is found in more attractive and desirable plants. Speaking objectively, this is very fascinating. I mean, you don't want dandelions growing in your lawn. I get it. I don't want that either. But there's something pretty fascinating about dandelions. As a plant, that is. Flowers of weeds, that is, provide nectar for bees and the production of honey. In the case of non-toxic weeds, they can provide an alternate food source for animals. Some weeds have medicinal properties. You can use them for healing and holistic practices. So it's not all a waste. I mean, there are good things that actually can come from those. Just because they're unwanted and undesirable doesn't mean that they're completely useless or unimpressive. Ah, there's another lesson right there. Another lesson for us. The same can be said for Christians. Some Christians, men and women, in the brotherhood may appear to be less impressive, less desirable than others. Some do not possess what is considered more visible or attractive talents as others. At the same time, they all belong to the same body. They all love the same Savior. They're all saved in the same way. They're all saved by the same gospel and for the same reason, because God loves each and every one of us and each and every person here. We all have the same basic needs. We all have a complex soul that we don't even understand fully. And if we're not toxic with sin, we have something to offer. Just because we may appear unwanted and undesirable to some doesn't mean that we are entirely useless and unimportant or unimpressive. And I say that because you might feel that way about yourself, for all I know. You might think, well, I don't have the speaking talents that Chad obviously has. Okay, so you don't. But I may not have the talents that you have as a giver or as a, you know, a person showing mercy and hospitality. Or maybe you're, you know, a person of encouragement, far better than I am. I know that's true of some of you because I've seen it. I've been a recipient of your encouragement. So it's not that we all have to have the same talents. It's actually better when we have a diversified talent group, if you will. Some of you are five talent people. Some of you are two. Some of you are one. And that's okay as long as you're doing your best with what you've been given. Some might look at five talent people as, oh, they're the cream of the crop. And one talent people as, oh, they're people that are kind of lowly and, you know, and easily dismissed. God doesn't see you that way. Jesus doesn't see you that way. If other people see you that way, that's their problem. Don't make it your problem. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 14 through 25, another longer reading there. We're not going to go through, but I invite you to on your own. Paul is saying, in essence, it's all a wash anyway. The focus is not on any one member, but it's on the entire body, the body as a whole. What is important, he says, is not the quantity or the size of your contribution, but that you are alive and active and a functioning member of the body, so that when the body is glorified, you, being part of that body, will also be glorified. That's what he talks about. Your part in the body may seem small and insignificant compared to another part. So what? Are you active? Are you a living, contributing member to the work as a whole? That's what's important. Are you doing your best with what you have to work with? That's what's important. That's what he wants us to see in ourselves. Again, I want to clarify, nothing ever good comes from sin. And when weeds are used as metaphors for sin, we're not trying to praise them for that. There's nothing good to say of them in that regard. And yet, God created weeds. And everything that God created in the natural world has something to offer us. Some kind of lesson or perspective or some kind of way of looking at life that will help us, that will benefit us. Dandelions, thistles, buttercups, clover may not seem like impressive plants up front. And compared to lilies and magnolias and fuchsias and orchids, they're not. That doesn't mean that there's something that you can't learn from them, from these humble plants. So if we're not doing our jobs as Christ's disciples well, these humble plants may actually supersede our own efforts and outperform us. So say what you will about weeds, but it's possible that they may be doing far better at what they are doing than what you and I might be doing in our roles. It's a pretty sad thing to be outperformed by a weed. We do want to end positively and saying, well, we don't want weeds to humiliate us, but to teach us how to conduct our lives even better than before by turning, of all things, to plants that nobody really wants. And I say that intentionally because to many Christians, you and I, or to the world, I should say, Christians are the weeds of the world. We are the people that nobody wants. We are the people that they want to get rid of. We are the people that they want to silence and step on and drive over. We are the people that are, in their eyes, unwanted, undesirable, useless, and even expendable. The world is going in this direction. Atheists, humanists, godless people would like to eradicate the world of Christians if they could. They often view us as useless and brainless and expendable people. We don't have anything to contribute. We're always in the way. We're always calling attention to things that the world is doing as being ungodly and evil and counterproductive. So they want to silence us. And yet instead of getting weaker and softer and more timid, what we should do is seek the Lord's strength all the more, trust in the power of the word that he has given to us even more, and exhibiting a courage that we should have in him, that confidence that Hebrew writer talked about, have that confidence so that we will not stop growing and stop what we're doing. I respectfully challenge you to do that. That is my lesson. That is our lessons for these two lessons. I hope that you've gotten something out of them. We leave you with our traditional invitation. If you need to come forward and respond to our lesson in any way, if you're ready to be baptized into Christ, if you're ready to say something about your recommitment to the Lord, this is an opportunity for you to respond. Come forward if you need to as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.